The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is proudly presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese.
Let me share a local Spokane secret that everyone needs to know about. Owens Farms Piedmontese beef. Trust me when I say this. You cannot beat this meat. It's tender. It's flavorful. It's some of the best beef you'll ever put into your mouth, period. And to top it off, when you eat it, you can say goodbye to the meat hangovers. That's because Piedmontese beef is lean and has much less cholesterol than your typical supermarket beef. It's a new year. It's time to start living your life with no regrets. Go to ofp.farm to reserve your half or whole order of premium Piedmontese beef today. Go to ofp.farm. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is produced independently and locally in Spokane, Washington by Spokecast Studios. Our city, our stories. Visit www.spokecast.com to learn more about how you can start your very own podcast today. Thank you to Jinx Universe and Position Music for letting The Perimeter use the song Let's Do It Again from Jinx's album, Make It Look Good.
The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is brought to you in sponsorship with Delicious Hamburgers. Did you know Delicious Hamburgers and fries are the freshest in Spokane? Their hamburgers are never frozen, and that's because it tastes better. There's not even a freezer in the restaurant. Their fries are always made to order and never set under a heat lamp. It's differences like this you can truly taste. Next time you're craving the freshest hamburgers and fries, head to the corner of Augusta and Division and ask for the Perimeter Combo, a triple delicious hamburger with grilled onions, pickles, and special sauce. It also comes with fries and your choice of a milkshake. Delicious. Taste the difference.
Let me introduce you to the Spokane Workers Co-op, a locally based worker-owned holding company whose mission it is to increase access to living wages, workplace democracy, and autonomy, and to create the sort of lifelong career trajectories that are increasingly uncommon for the majority of people in America. The worker owners of SWC, regardless of which business they work, are equal co-owners of the entire holding company, providing them not just direct ownership of the fruits of their own labor, but ownership in a diversified and resilient portfolio of businesses dedicated to serving Spokane and the Inland Northwest. SWC also buys traditional businesses. SWC buys traditional businesses like LLCs, partnerships, and sole proprietorships, for example, from owners who are ready to retire and who want to make sure the employees who help them build their business are taken care of after the owner leaves. Learn more at www.spokane.coop. And if you're an owner interested in talking about selling, email SWC at team@spokane.coop. That is team@spokane.coop.
Let's do it again!
Welcome to The Perimeter, Season 2, Week 12, sponsored by Owens Farms Piedmontese. I got Brennan, the producer, with me. Kind of a slim week for Gonzaga, being only one game. Kind of a almost historic game for Julian Strother. We're going to get into that. But a huge week coming up for Gonzaga with Santa Clara coming to town. And then obviously St. Mary's on Saturday at Walnut Creek. St. Mary's undefeated in conference play, hit a buzzer beater against BYU. We'll get into that. So fun week coming up. Bye week was interesting, kind of needed, I think, for this club. And then we played a Portland team who we just played about 10 days before, and it had the makings of being a trap game because obviously the Santa Clara and St. Mary's week coming up, and understanding that, you know, we're technically one game behind with a game to, you know, a game to play against St. Mary's. So you just felt like, hey, man, we just beat this team by 40 pretty easily in Spokane. We knocked down a bunch of shots. You know, it's not really a hostile environment when you go in there. It's mostly Zag fans when you play at Portland, which is always kind of funny. So then you're, you know, before the game, it's like, yeah, this might be a scary one because Portland, you know, at the start of the season at the PK 85 that we were both at, Had some good, had some good moments. You know, they took Carolina to a late game situation. They beat Villanova, and then they lost to Michigan State by one, who we, you know, obviously beat by one. So the team was has the ability to get going. Obviously, we were better matched for them, but the game started pretty smoothly for both clubs. I thought they were getting up and down. Gonzaga had a 10-point lead there in the first half, mainly because of Julian Strother shooting from beyond the arc. He started 3 for 4, 4 for 5 from three, and it just wasn't a complete rhythm, and there were some breakdowns defensively for Portland. There's, I can remember two plays out of timeouts where they went one man removed on a down screen, and you could see the look, because I always look at the other team's benches when the other team scores, just to kind of get the tenor of how they're feeling, and if it was a legit mess up by the player for something they didn't scout. And you could just see Shante Liggins like mouthing, like, don't go removed, you know, like they talked about it, and he stepped up and made threes. And in that first half had 17 points, was 5 for 7, 6 of 10 overall from the field, but 5 of 7 from downtown. So the record single game is 9 at Gonzaga. And I think it's Pangos, Kispert, and I think Wiltshire did it, I think, when he had that 40. So, like, there's, you know, obviously a bunch. Oh, no, no, excuse me. It was Dan Dickow. It was the third. And I think Wiltshire had 7 or 8 in that 40 he had at Pacific. So, anyway, at half, you're like, well, he has a chance to, you know, break a record that's pretty covenant with all the great shooters and guards that we've had in this program. You know, and so you're sitting there going, you know, it's kind of the storyline. And Gonzaga at halftime, you know, was up 6, 35-29. But like I said, they had a 10-point lead going into a timeout. Shante Liggins does a good job calling timeout. And then they get Moses Woods going, who's, I think, their best player on the perimeter. Kind of long, springy, athletic kid that looks not like a hooper. And it kind of doesn't shock you, but you're like, oh, this kid's better than he looks.
It's, yeah.
I know that sounds funny, but not exactly like a you know, high-level basketball player build and what have you, but had a good first half, was knocking down shots and made a couple corner threes to keep them in that basketball game. So, you know, going into halftime, you're like, all right, Julian's playing fantastic. From a just a pure basketball standpoint, it was a better watch and a better call, because when we played them at Gonzaga, their defensive strategy for Portland was awful. And it's not just me saying that, but 2 years in a row we played them, we had 18 threes made, and the second year we had 17 made threes. So it was like, come on, guys, like,
yeah,
whatever you're trying to do is not working. Like, rolling the dice on high-level Division I players at this school, that's kind of what we do, is make shots. So try something different, just from a, you know, a watch standpoint. And they were doing that. And they had Drew, I think he was 1 for 3. Let me check the stats. Yeah, he was 1 for 3 in the first half. Mm. So they did a good job with the Robertson kid, who was about 6'6", the Australian kid who's kind of their do-everything player. They had him guarding Drew, and they pulled the chair on him a couple times. They would dig from the weak side and then full rotate, you know, just made it, this mixed it up, and then sat on his spins. So they did a terrific job of, you know, kind of keeping him off rhythm. And that's kind of why they were in the game from a defensive standpoint. But also, like I said, Julian Strother in the first half, 5 of 7, 6 of 10 from downtown. You know, so you're up 6, you feel pretty good. On the broadcast, we were, you know, talking about, you know, oh, you know, he has a chance to break the record. And these guys have had 9 threes, and I wonder if he can get to 10. And, you know, he was shooting in rhythm. Even the ones he missed looked good coming off his hands. And Portland, God bless them, was a couple of them. They were just, like I said, would go removed, or there would be a guy that would just run into a screen and, you know, do the whole, oh, I got screen, I can't get over, coach. And I think it's one of the laziest plays in basketball. Obviously, you get clipped, but guys, you know, you don't fall dead on a screen, and it's bad basketball. And that's what happens, is allows a guy to get going offensively. You know, so start that second half. Obviously the game was in balance. Like I said, there's a majority of Gonzaga fans there, but there was enough Portland fans when they were making a run. It kind of was back and forth. So it's kind of interesting in that building. But you know, at some points I was kind of rooting for Portland to keep the game close. So I don't like to call blowouts, and they're not very fun to watch and whatever. So for the majority of the start of that second half, they've made enough plays, Portland, to keep us in the basketball game, and Julian Strother continued. His hot shooting was just on fire from downtown, you know, comes out, makes his next two to start the second half. So at that point, he's 7 of 9. And you're like, okay, here's a chance with like, you know, 14, 13 minutes to go. Like, you know, I remember looking at the overall at this after the second or the first, excuse me, the first TV timeout, and it's under 15, under 16. So anytime after that, that's why there's always a media timeout. You're like, all right. So he's, you know, if he gets obviously three more, he's going to break the record. You know, it was just absolutely rolling, but we kept him kind of at arm's length. We couldn't really quite put him away. And it was brought up in, you know, the broadcast and the pregame, and I think it's worthy to bring up on this show, is, you know, Gonzaga this year has a knockout punch, but it's not as lethal and it's not as used as much, if that makes sense. And I think that's where everybody's, I think, surface frustration comes. It's like, why are we letting a team like this hang around? It's like, well, you know, we don't have six guys that can make a three like we've had in the past, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And make back to back, and where we go on a quick 8-0 run, 9-0 run. It's just not the team that we have. Doesn't mean we don't have a knockout punch, but it's just not as prevalent as it's been in years past. But again, if you're going through that second half, they got the game within 6-5 multiple times, but I never felt like we were out of control.
Yeah.
You know, like we were firmly in control of that basketball game. The whole time. And it reminds me of my teams. I mean, we were always in control. I went undefeated twice in conference play. I'm just saying that. But we never won by like 35.
Right.
And we were always on the floor late because we were up 12. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about it on this show, and especially the first season, of like, you know, it was the running joke, like, you guys do it on purpose so you can score more points late in the game. And it's like, kind of, you know, it's anyway. So, you know, my point is, like, Portland was playing a good brand of basketball. Moses Wood, who had 13 in the first half, ended up with 19, but we did a better job on covering him and you know, slowing him down. But we were never out of control of that game. I mean, their guys made some threes that were kind of like, oh, how did that guy make them? And they ended up being 10 for 24, and it's a team that kind of lives and dies by the three. You know, they're analytic based. And what I mean by that is, usually those type of teams don't play with a big or a true big with a back to the basket. And then they kind of preach either layups or wide open threes. You take the middle part out of the game. I'm a fan of part of that style, but I think overall you can't win with that unless you're super elite from beyond the arc, like in Alabama, or obviously like the pro level, like the Warriors. But like the Warriors, who kind of started this trend, always led the league in 2-point field goal percentage. Nobody ever said that. It's like,
oh, really? You wouldn't know that, would you? Yeah,
if you, because they get layups, and then they also like were okay with a guy like who was a good player. Every once in a while, you can make a 12-footer. It's okay if you take that shot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But some guys get so locked in, and then so you get players. Or you get defensively, it gets really easy to cover. You just work on your downhill switches or your ball screen action, and you know, you close out heavy on the 3-point line and just make them drive. And then if you have rim protection, it's like, well, okay, have fun trying to make 6-foot floaters over hands all night. You know, it's tough. It's hard. So, you know, in the course of that game, Julian was continuing to roll. What was nice about the second half is he was driving and hitting that little 2-foot like shot put floater that he has. It's a good shot, but he was going against momentum and he didn't fall in love with the three. Now, there was a couple times I think he should have taken some more heat check, especially he was sitting on 8. You know, he ended up 8 for 12 from three. And I was like, fuck, go for the record, man. Like,
do it.
Yeah, if you're feeling it, like, let it rip. And But again, he played a flawless game, 14-21, and 40 points. Obviously, it's the first guy since Wilcher did it against Pacific that whenever last year he was on that team in 2016.
Can I ask a question about that real quick?
Yeah.
About like history and like knowing like where you're at. Like, do you, like as a player, did you know where you're at, like when you were scoring like
points?
Yeah. Like if you're going to be
always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like some guys say you don't and they're full of shit. There was games where, you know, again, this is not a narcissistic take, but I would have a lot of points and I'd lose track, but I knew a kind of ballpark. Like,
right.
Oh, I had 37. I thought I was at 35.
Right.
You know, but like for the most part, you know, and everybody says, oh, I don't pay attention to that. I was like, okay.
Well, you knew because Roni had 40. And
oh, yeah. Sorry. Are you talking like
you as like, I'm talking you, but as a player, like you just know like what the history of the statistical history of the team. Like, so, you know, like the most threes we've ever made in a game.
I don't think he would know that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That to me, that stuff would be a fair, if somebody said like, I didn't know, then you'd be like, yeah, he's not full of shit.
Yeah. Okay.
But like individual, like when you're just playing and like, you know, if you had 18 or 16, you probably know you had 18.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like there's a bigger, bigger picture to that.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, you always, and then you tell kids, especially at a young age as a coach, like never go look at the scoreboard. Like never, you know, that's my dad was never like, doesn't matter how many points you had when I was growing up. But then when you get older, you're like, all right, I know. You know? So, but I think the team was like, come on, somebody's got to get 40. Because Drew's flirted with it like four times this year, like where he should have.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the Pacific game. He was 4-11 from the free throw line. He has 38 points.
Mm-hmm.
He has a stretch there where he scores 18 in a row. And you're like, dude, you should be getting to 45. And it's not a knock, but like, it'd be pretty cool if you broke the single game record. Like, go break it. Like, you're going to be the all-time leading scorer, one of the best players at this program ever. Go get a record that's going to be hard to break. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it was pretty cool when he got that tip in late, and Julian in that game, because everybody stood up and because they knew where he was at. And I was happy for him. That was cool because I think it's the graphic I saw is only 10 players have done that in Gonzaga history, score 40 or more. So that's a cool thing to etch in there. And he shattered his score, like his PR or whatever. Mm-hmm. This was like 23 before that.
And
just went bonkers, but a great shooting performance. It wasn't a performance. A lot, you know, sometimes guys get to the 40s, you know, with the free throw line, but he made 14 field goals. 14 for 21 is obviously great. And then 8 for 12 from downtown. So like, it's one of those games, like he was legitimately hot and getting buckets instead of just, you know, hitting wide open threes and then maybe getting fouled a lot or something like that. But very clean game, and I was happy for him. Like I said, it was cool, and it helped us kind of, you know, pace ourselves in that game. We ended up winning 82-67. I think if you're just being completely honest, the game felt like a 10-point game, so it was about where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I didn't ever feel like we were not in firm control of the pace and rebounding and turnovers. And you know what I mean? There was never an issue with us defensively. Obviously we made some mistakes, but there was never like something that we're like, oh God, you know, like the LMU game, like, oh, here comes Cam Shelton off a ball screen. He's probably going to score, create a wide open shot for somebody. I never felt like that. But again, I have to give some credit to Shantae Liggins and that staff. They tried something different, how they guarded Drew. They didn't just throw the kitchen sink at him, but they had their plan was still like, hey, let's take him away, which they did. When he was 3-7, only had 8 points after having 38, you know, the game before. But they still guarded the 3-point line. I know that sounds funny with Julian 8, but he was the only guy. Everybody else made, four other guys made one. You know what I'm saying? So like, if one guy doesn't go nuts, you do a pretty good job from the 3-point line as a unit, and they haven't done that against us the last two games. Like I mentioned, 18 maids versus 17 maids at home. So I was kind of pleased from just a basketball standpoint and watching the game. It was like, good, you guys actually learned.
And, yeah.
You know, just didn't let us toe up threes and beat the shit out of you. And like I said, those games are boring to call. I'll always take this type of game over. But yeah, I thought it was a good road trip. Those are it. Like I said, it had the making to be a trap game because you got Santa Clara, who San Francisco should have beat us. The game down there, Santa Clara could have beat us, right? We mm-hmm. made more plays down the stretch than we did against San Francisco. San Francisco made a ton of mistakes. But my point is, like, Santa Clara is, like, they played us well. They got some talent. And so that's another game that I know we're looking forward to. And so I was like, man, this has a chance to be a trap game because we've seen Portland, even though they've been kind of shitty in conference, they've had, you know, they've had a stretch against teams that are much better. Like we mentioned the PK 80, I know that's months ago, but you still know a team has that ability. You know, so I was proud of our guys for kind of getting through that and, you know, doing the right things and, you know, getting a win and getting ready for this week. And, you know, Santa Clara coming in, it's going to be a fun one. What was your thoughts like on the performance from Julian? Cause you know, it's rare that you see a guy make eight threes. And
as I was watching it, I was thinking back to our conversation last week and you talking about how you wish he would
shoot more.
And yeah. It was like, he listened to the podcast because
maybe he did.
but he was making shots that, you know, that you'd expect him to make because you know, he has the potential to be a really good, he's a really good player, but I think he has the potential to be like up in the top. Like, I think he just has that skill set. Yeah. And I just was watching, I wasn't expecting it, but it was a pleasant surprise. And, yeah. But it made me wonder, like, is this going to happen again? We're going to go more towards this style is it just going to be one day it's going to be Drew, one day it's going to be Julian, one day it's going to be Rasir, yeah. You know, is that just the team this year?
I think so. I mean, obviously at this point of the time of the year, you can get into a rhythm late in the season. You kind of, you know, cement yourself as a, you know, in that hard rotation seven where it's hard to take you out. I know Fuey's been playing eight and a half this year, which is not abnormal, but the rotations definitely get shorter at this time of year. So like, if you're rolling like that, I would continue to obviously try to score the basketball. I mean, that sounds obvious, but if you're, you know, getting the green light to kind of let it rip, you got to be a little bit more aggressive and see if you can get yourself going. So, you know, I was happy for him. Like I said, it was a beautiful performance. Wish he could have got the record of 10 threes. I want to see that happen. but you know, just overall, it was pretty cool to get. And, you know, like I said, he did it clean with making buckets, and that's always fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was pleased with the win. And then, you know, coming into this week with Santa Clara, who's a good basketball team, Herb Sindek led, they're trying to win down there. And I know that sounds weird. Like, everybody doesn't try. I'm like, yeah, if some of these schools don't really give a shit. And I know it sounds funny, but they do on the surface. But if you really look into their recruiting methods and what they pay coaches and what their admissions at level is, like, some of these schools are just there to be there. Santa Clara is trying to win. They've had a decent pass in the 90s, and there's plenty of money, you know, alumni money still in that area in the Bay. You know, so they, you know, they've talked about, you know, redoing the gym, talked about, you know, facilities and stuff like that. And at least when people are having those conversations and trying to win, you know, you expect the program to make leaps, and they've done that this year. I mean, they're 16-7, 4-4 in conference. Like I said, that first time we played them had us on the ropes. They were up 20-8 early in the basketball game. The lefty, I'm going to struggle his name, but Podzimski, he's from Illinois. Very good, talented guard, kind of a combo. Had a really good game against us the first time. Kind of herky jerky, plays kind of, you know, just weird, but gets in the paint, can finish, did a good job of distributing once we took away his driving abilities, but really gave us some issues in that first game. But it's leading him in rebounds as well as a guard. 8.2, 3 is he leading him in assists, 3.3. So he's going to be a big factor for us defensively. I've always said it, and most basketball people understand this, is it's always hard to guard lefties. It's just different. Mm-hmm. And when they're good, it looks even better than what they, you know, it's just cool. especially like lefty guard. So I was a big fan of watching him play that first game. It'll be interesting to see how they do up here. Because like I said, they had a good plan against us. They attacked Drew in that game. He started off bad. It was after that. It was that San Francisco's second leg of that San Francisco trip. And I think that San Francisco game, he was 3-16. And he started this game out 1-6, but ended up, I think, with like 19 or 18 points and did better in the second half. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see because a lot of these West Coast Conference teams obviously play better at home. That's no secret or no, you know, in-depth analysis. But and then you see them at our place and they look totally different and the belief system is not there. But everybody's got to feel much better after the LMU game if you're talking about the other opponents. Mm. Like, hey, there is a chance.
Right.
There is a formula. This place isn't, you know, the Fort Knox of not winning. There's a chance to get this done. And especially in a year like this year for Gonzaga, that's, you know, not as talented on the surface. Still a good basketball club. I'm looking forward to that game again. And I know I just talked about Portland being a trap game. This one has a chance to be a trap game as well. On Thursday, because Saturday we play one of the one-off games. We go to Walnut Creek with the game against St. Mary's, who's undefeated in conference right now, 8-0, and just barely beat BYU. Poor guys at BYU, man. They had another one where they could beat a top 25 team with free throws to go and go 1-for-2 and lose at the buzzer again, or basically at the buzzer. Where they could at least, you know, shore it up and make their free throws. And it was like, it wasn't like, you know, one of their bad bigs or something like that had free throws there. Mm-hmm. Their main players had free throws and they go 1-for-2. And the St. Mary's kid, he's actually a local. It's like the first time they've ever had a local kid, like get recruited and actually play for them. And I know that sounds funny, but I've talked to their radio guy, and they're like, yeah, he's actually like legit. And I watched the game and he's like really good. And it's like, but like, apparently nobody's good in Walnut Creek ever for basketball. It kind of makes sense. The demographics are different. And I mean that is like, you know, if you're like pretty affluent, like you're probably not in the gym all the time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of how it is.
I was down in Walnut Creek this weekend for visiting a friend actually. And I found out there's a high school there, De La Salle, which is a Catholic high school. It's a
powerhouse.
It's a powerhouse, but their sport is football.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting that they haven't had many homegrown recruits.
None at all, apparently. So like this kid's kind of a big deal down there and has done, you know, kudos to them for keeping him in town because that's harder than people think. You know, he's doing great. And he, like I said, he made that last second shot fadeaway with pretty good defense against BYU. But, you know, the St. Mary's team's playing excellent this season. You know, what did you say the new ranks are?
So the new rankings are St. Mary's is now 18 in the coaches poll. Mm-hmm. But their KenPom they're number 7. And so
They're good.
They're good. they have a higher KenPom rating than us, than Gonzaga. And I was trying to dig these stats up, but this might be the highest ranked we've ever faced each other.
I think the only other time would be maybe the Della Dova years, but they weren't as regarded nationally at those times.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like they were probably better because they had I'm talking like the Patty Mills and Della Dova years because those guys were pros, mm-hmm. but they weren't as regarded nationally.
Right.
And obviously Randy Bennett's a better coach than he was, just like Coach Fee, like anybody, and has got his system more dialed in, but you have to be right. Like this has got to be like the highest both teams have ever been rated in. And hopefully we knock on wood and get that win against Santa Clara and they win whoever the hell they're playing against. Mm-hmm. And we play them for, you know, the control of the league.
Yeah.
It'll be a crazy atmosphere. It's always nuts down there. They do a good job of kind of getting everybody fervor, and that gym's just so tiny. Have you ever been in that gym?
I've never been. No,
it's tiny.
I've heard it's so small. I heard it's like
a cracker box.
Good atmosphere. Yeah,
yeah, it's great. They've made rumblings about wanting to build a new facility, and I get it, but it's like, don't make it too big, dude. You know, mm-hmm. only make it like 4,000 for your area. Mm-hmm. It's not a knock, but like, you got to know where you're at and what you're competing against. And you know what I'm saying? It's Walnut Creek. Yeah. Like, you better be really good if people are going to get out of their house and come watch you play.
Absolutely.
It's like LA. Like, mm-hmm. oh, you're not very good. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing. And so, but yeah, he's done an excellent job, Randy Bennett, of getting that program as usual. I've always had a lot of respect for St. Mary's. I know they're our rival, but it's not like a BYU one where you're kind of like, I hope they lose every game. Like St. Mary, like, he's a really good coach. Mm-hmm. He's the winningest coach in California in the last like 15 years, which is always nuts. People are like, really? And then you're like, well, yeah, he's had better runs than UCLA. He's had better runs at USC. Cal's a pile of dog shit mm-hmm. and has been for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then you look at all the UC schools, you're like, well, they're good, but they're not, you know, some of them are good for, you know, one or 2 years or whatever, but he's never up for any of those jobs. And you're always like, or maybe he isn't on this, you know, on the surface, but you're like, how does Randy Bennett not get a fucking phone call from Cal, who's right down the road?
Right.
And they've been absolutely, and he probably wouldn't take the job now, but like 5 years ago, like, hey, can you turn this around? Cause I mean, they're awful, like 2-15 awful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Really bad.
Really bad. And you're like, how is this? But anyway, you know, I think the thing with him is people, and this is not a knock on him, but he'd probably say the same thing. Like, you'll lose the press he'll lose the press conference, but you'll win the basketball game. And which is more important. And some people, I know it sounds funny, some programs don't like that. Mm. He's not very good behind the mic. He's not terrible, but he's not like, you know, charismatic or whatever. He's just kind of, he comes across as, you know, crotchety old man, which he's not, but that's what it seems like. Mm-hmm. So some ADs were like, well, that's not going to get everybody excited. I'm like, well, going to the NCAA tournament, you're out and being solid, and you know, like a 20-win season's 22-5 or 8 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That should get your fan base excited, mm-hmm. and then being good enough to be like, oh, you can start coming to these Vegas tournaments, and you can just get, you know, like Maui, you know, you guys are good enough to like be considered for those.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've always had a lot of respect for him. They run a boring system, but it works. They just plug and play every year. It's the same guys. Or then if they replace the guy that they just replaced, he's exactly the same fucking build. He looks the same. He's the same player. All their guards are like 6'2", 6'3", slow white guys that figure it out. Mm-hmm. They always have good bigs inside. I've had Samhan, Waldo, Jock, whatever the other guy was, Daniel Kisper. Like, they're all just like 6'10 to 6'11, 7 foot, kind of slow, bumbling big man, but that are extremely skilled and effective. And then he's also had two NBA point guards, and Patty Mills and Dellavedova. And Mickey McConnell's on staff there is a really good player. So you're always like, man, I want to hate these guys more. But if you really look at, like, from a program standpoint and facilities and resources and all that stuff, like, he's squeezed water out of a rock and done it consistently. And so I always tip my cap, and, you know, I like going to that game because it's always, you know, it's a good, healthy rivalry. It's not like a one that's cheap or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I like their radio guys. They're like SIDs are cool. You know what I mean? You know, mm-hmm. it's a good rivalry. There's good people. We always have beers with the radio. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like fun, and it's cool when they actually, like, I don't know, it sounds funny, but the year that they beat us, when we had like that snacks and that crew with BC and Rui, and we just played like dog shit in the West Coast Conference tournament game.
Yeah.
And we still made a one seed or whatever, but like, I was generally happy for. We were all like, ah, cool. They get to go to the tournament too. You know what I'm saying?
For
like,
sure.
So yeah, it's going to be a fun one. And like I said, hopefully both teams take care of business. I want to see us be the hunter with one game, you know, behind with one loss against St. Mary's on their home floor. If you can get that win, obviously you're firmly in control of the regular season championship. And I know Coach Few loves winning those regular season championship and obviously tournament championships, but he talks about it. It's not just like a, like, he likes to dominate the league like that. And he still stresses the importance of those type of situation. So I'm really looking forward to this week. I think it's nice that we've gotten, you know, like Portland's out of the way and stuff like that. Now these games coming up are going to be great. BYU at home, obviously Santa Clara at home. Like I just talked about, San Francisco at home is going to be good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, and then we got two remaining against St. Mary's, you know, one there and one at our place. So it's a good schedule coming up.
The one against St. Mary's will be, I mean, the final game of the regular season. Yeah. And I mean, that could, I mean, if we're both tied,
I know,
then that's going to be a monster game.
Yeah.
And I hope that's how it goes too.
That's exactly like when we were watching them play BYU after the Portland game in a bar, and be like, it's like we're rooting for St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Like legitimately. And, you know, like I said, BYU makes that free throw and then poor bastards that come down and hit like a fadeaway. Now the kid, that freshman kid, hits a fadeaway with a guy in his face from like 18 feet. And you can see the defeat on BYU. Because if BYU, if you think back, gets those two wins.
Yeah.
Gonzaga. And then now you're talking like, all right, probably an NCAA tournament team unless you completely flame out the rest of the season. But you're legitimately like, you're in. Mm-hmm. And now you just, what seed you're going to get, but you're in the tournament.
Yep.
And nope, you gotta make your free throws. So
and another 4-5 in the conference. Yeah, so it's just
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like it those would have been two amazing, you know, quad one, top 30, Ken Palm wins, all that shit that the committee considers. Mm-hmm. You would have had them. And so, but anyway, looking forward to this week. Do we got any listener questions or anything?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to go back to like the Drew Timmy, like scoring 40. Like, it's funny when you, because we also talked about that last week and how, and my brother texted me, he's like, it's funny how you and Adam talked about Drew scoring 40 and then Julian comes out and does it. Yeah. But I mean, is it important for his like career as playing for Gonzaga to get that number, like the score of 40? It's probably not important, but like, is it like, that's a stat that you probably want. Like,
yeah, I think it is. In a sense that just be part of that, I guess, group that's done it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think the biggest thing for him, if you're going all time, is just what type of run do they make this year? Mm-hmm. And that's for all of us, of the guys. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what type of run do they make in March? But individually, he's going to have the best one of all is the all-time leading scorer. And he did it naturally with four natural years, you know, mm-hmm. true freshman.
Yeah.
You know, somebody was telling me, that a lot of fans, you know, I'm so sick. He's been there forever. And you're like, dude, he's only been there for 3.5 seasons, just like you normally would.
Right.
Before. Cause everybody thinks, one of the casual fans like thinks it could be a COVID year. You know, some guys are playing fifth years, like Rashir's a COVID year. And like our guys actually have a chance to do that. Anton has a chance to do that. Mm-hmm. And so does Drew. Technically, he could technically come back next year.
He could, yeah.
Yeah, which is but bonkers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think not getting 40 is like something that,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's a cool stat, but I don't think it's like then.
I think it just has to happen. Like it's one of the like,
yeah,
it's a volume thing for him because he doesn't shoot the three. Like,
yeah, I mean, no, you're right.
You know,
I mean, like, that Pacific game, and it's not even knocked, you know, to talk about free throws always because it is an issue for our team, but there's nothing you can really do besides shoot them in practice and tell each other good job. But like he could have had 45 that night easily.
Yeah, easily.
He goes 4-for-11, obviously that's 7. But you're like just on his rhythm in that game. You're like, man, he could get the 50. I mean, really like they had no answer for him inside, but it was kind of cool. Like you said, like we talk about it and then Julian comes out and gets 40. Like, oh, we got it out of the way. Somebody finally got it. And, yeah, it was cool. But, again, I think the biggest thing for this weekend, obviously talking about Santa Clara and St. Mary's, like Drew's got to play well, and he's played well. I thought Portland's defense was good. And what I've always admired about Drew's game, especially this year, is like he never forces anything if he's having a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's a hard thing temperament-wise to do, to not get frustrated. I mean, I had a couple games my junior year, even my sophomore year when I was, you know, averaging 19-20. Where teams would do a good job of taking me away or taking what I like to do away. And then, you know, I had some games where I was forcing it and then worried too much about statistics instead of just, all right, it's not my night, but somebody else's night. You know what I'm saying? That's harder. It's harder than it seems is what I'm telling
people. Right, yeah.
Because you're like, it's not just like, I got to get to my numbers, but you're like, well, I'm good, and this is what helps the team. But sometimes, hey, man, they have a good plan against you. They take it away, and you just got to move on from it. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, do you remember I want to talk about this. It's because it's like, I think people want to know, like, do you remember the first time you scored 40 for Gonzaga? It was November 22nd, 2005. I don't have the game up, but you scored 43 points. And like, but the question I asked.
Oh yeah. It was against Michigan State. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course. Like, did this come easy? Like, is it just like, you just felt it? Is that how it, like, scoring like that?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, if you get rolling and you know, it's just going to sound, again, like when I talk about this stuff, I'm trying to, you know, make sure that people understand it's not a, you know, from a narcissistic place or whatever, but some people can get in the zone and some can't. Mm-hmm. And this is not like a crazy take, but if you listen to other athletes, like, it's the coolest feeling in the world. You'll never get it back. Mm-hmm. Like, when you get in that zone, it's fucking, it's unbelievable. It's better than whatever else you want.
right. Well, that's what I felt like.
Whatever else you get your kicks from in life. Wink, wink. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, watching Julian on Saturday, like it was a lot like it felt like watching you. Like, he was going through the lane. He was taking shots. He was getting, like, tip-ins, like,
yeah.
Like,
Well, that's why I kept mentioning, like, the free throw or the field goals that he made, because I was like, he was actually getting buckets. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like he was getting fouled a lot and getting the benefit of, you know, he was only 4 for 4 from the free throw line. So, like, it was a, like, I'm going to get buckets tonight type of game.
Yeah.
And that's why it was cool that he got to 40.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, you know, obviously I remember that game. I had one against Portland at home. It's the only one I ever did was at home. It was Portland. I think I had 41 and I had like 33 in the first half. And that was,
wow. Yeah.
But yeah, getting in that zone is pretty special. Like, it's hard to describe because it just, everything slows down. I know that's so cliche, but everything. And then just everything you put up is like online. It's weird.
Yeah.
everything is like going to go in. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was cool to watch him do that, because it's easier to do that, like, getting in a zone, I guess, or it's more appealing to watch when a perimeter guy does it, mm-hmm. shooting from the outside.
Yeah.
Not that bigs don't do it, but it's like, oh, cool, you were in the zone from 4 foot jump hooks. Like, sweet, you know?
Right.
So again, fantastic game for him. Like I said, genuinely happy that somebody finally got to that and get it out of the way. For us to be like, somebody scored 40 this year. It's been a while. You know, and I know that sounds funny, but that it helps for like recruiting, like mm-hmm. skilled players. Like, see, we got guys on the wing that get 40. And then if you're really deep diving, like, well, shit, sometimes Julian shoots like 6 times a night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There's maybe some bullshit mixed into that one, but mm-hmm. we'll just let it slip. But so anyway,
yeah,
it was a cool week. Fantastic, you know, win against Portland, but super important week coming up, obviously, mm-hmm. especially Saturday in Walnut Creek. I can't stress that enough. We'll obviously come back with analysis next week on the show on how that those two games went, but it's going to be a fun weekend for, you know, Gonzaga basketball. Important stretch. This is when the games moving into February start to, you know, count more, obviously, seeding, and then your path to the NCAA tournament becomes more clear and what type of seed you're going to get. I'll get into that once the Lunardi stuff comes out. I think he's a really good resource every single year, and a lot of people consider, you know, when they do first four out, he's usually right on the money, which is hats off to him. So, but it's nice to know, like, all right, and he'll come out with that first, you're probably a 2 seed, a 3 seed. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that deeper once we start getting later in February, March, for people to understand potential matchups, what's a good matchup for us at a certain seed. Seeding obviously is important, but sometimes it's the draw, mm-hmm. you know, like, all right, you know, if we win, we're going to play either a really good smaller conference team or a middle of the pack underachieving bigger conference team, which is a better matchup. And then you really, you look at your rosters and go, even though the one team is 27-2 and the other team was 19-11, I'd rather play 27-2 because the 19-11's got three McDonald's All-Americans, right, and two of them were hurt half the year, mm-hmm, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? You're, mm-hmm, like, that's a bad fucking matchup.
Yeah.
It's like Memphis last year. Like, it was, oh, you should kick the shit. I was like, and when we saw that on this, the two line or whatever, the, yeah, second day or second game was like, this is going to come on, Boise State. Like,
right.
Please God, Boise State beat these guys. And obviously Drew had one of the best performances, but my point is, like, sometimes it's not just about the seeding. It's like matchups, personnel, obviously style of play, all that stuff. And so once that starts to materialize, we'll go a little bit deeper dive into what that looks like for us. But thank you to all our sponsors for listening. Thanks for Brennan for always helping out. And thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.